First of all, on this topic, I've got to remind you to look at the cloud website. And the reason I'm sitting down is because it's my guinea pig's hutch in my garden. And I tried moving it yesterday, I pulled my back there. So if you see me wincing, blame the guinea pig. Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's called an egglet. It's brilliant. I should talk about, so what we know about learning. First of all, it's complex. Okay? So learning and teaching is hard. There's no straightforward algorithm. If you do this, you get success. I think in some ways it's quite like parenting. It's part of the people who say, look, this is how to raise a child. It's been very complex and depends on the individual. You know it's complex. You know it's messy. You know, we don't know what the boundaries are between when people make progress and not. The boundary between a teacher and a learner, what's formal and informal, when you've learnt something and not, and how long it takes to sink in, how much of prior experience impacts. So there's not kind of clear boundaries, really. It's not much. And it varies an awful lot, you know. So what works for me may not work for you, what works in our history may not work for geography, and what works one year may not work the next year. And even when Diana was with us, I ran a big course at the OU once, and we had to split it across two servers. We had exactly the same forum set up, and these two different servers, different students, and made a completely different reaction to the course in those two different servers. So one group absolutely loved it, and one group absolutely hated it. And so, you know, you couldn't say that was because it was bad pedagogic design or whatever. It's the same course, same stuff, but just some took it from you. And the dominant members in those forums kind of shaped the personality. So it varies. And as we've heard, there's a lot of theories. You know, we're not sitting around waiting for more theories. You know, we've kind of got enough theories. Now, we can put a freeze on theories and still be okay. And so what we've done very sensibly is try to build tools to represent this. So what you're trying to do, you try and capture all this complexity. So you know, LAMP's probably the best example. We've got all the other tools you know about, Compendium, Phoebe, Pedagogic Plan, and so on. Now I want to contrast this with what, and across that we, what I know about social media. So these are just things that I've kind of picked up and I've developed. Six principles for what I think works well in social media. I spend a lot of time in social media pretending it's work. So first of all, the embed function is the universal asset of the web. So it really works. It may be dumb, it may be stupid, and it's like RSS, but it really works. So this is something that kind of cuts across the web. So you should accept that that's what works and build around it. Does everyone know what the embed code is? It's the stuff that kind of allows you to put YouTube clips anywhere you want, just take the embed code and stop it. And simple with reach trumps complex and small audience. So I think Twitter's a really good example of that. If you've been building very complex communication tools that can relate to all sorts of things, but who would have thought that the thing that has 140 characters is actually the one that's going to take off? It's because it allows you to have massive reach, and that's where everyone is, and it's in that community. Sharing is the kind of motivation for people to participate. So you have to make sharing really easy, something that people want to do, and there's something they reward for doing. So if the embed function is the kind of data driver of the stuff, then sharing is the kind of human motivation driver. So building around sharing and embed. Start simple and let others build on top. So you don't have to specify every possible function, keep it as simple as possible. Again, Twitter's a really good example of that. And people will develop stuff that you've never anticipated. So in some ways, you want to build an unpredictable system. The unpredictability and the assets. And in a strange way, providing limitations really helps frame input. So Twitter also gets 140 characters, their site called 12 seconds, where you can only upload video clips the last 12 seconds. And in some ways, they become quite compelling because this helps users frame what they want to do. So they know immediately what they need to do. I need to get on there and record it on it, sort of speak this thing. People try and work around it. So you wouldn't build those limitations in logically, but actually they would work. And lastly, the kind of ones. I think complexity comes from the network, not from the application itself. So it's the way users interact with the system and create content and the way they communicate, and that generates complexity. So you're better off having a simple application that fosters community rather than complex. So that the complexity kind of resides in the network. So if you ignored all that stuff you knew about learning, just threw away that several hundred years. If we were to try and build something that's basically about learning, that embodied these principles, what would it look like?
Yeah,
So there's something called trail fire, which allows you to create trails across the road. So I've got one here for the concept of edge of blue. What it does is it allows you to embed a tag on every page with comments. Then you're going to follow someone's trail across the road. Very good now, you're going to go through each track. There's something called instructables, where people are sharing kind of informal knowledge around lots of things. So it's how to measure the speed of light using chocolate. So, you know, and it's built around just images, but you kind of step through, step one, eat some chocolate, there's the microwaves. Now we're on to the thing that I've done. So Liam helped lock up this, it's called 9 steps. So I've gone for that principle that you limit what people do. So the base idea is you can teach anything you like, 9 steps. I think Orson Welles said, you learn all you knew about simple top reading an hour. And you get someone good. So the idea is you just have 9 steps of embeddable sequence. And so this is a crash course in zombie movies, which I know you've all been dying for. So start off fairly light, you know, you've got zombies in plain English from the people at the front of the car. Maybe switch to Mac.
Oh, it's my fault.
It is your fault. It doesn't resize anything.
Are you trying to find
your... I'm trying to get to where I can see some... No, the sound and on the screen as well. So we start off with something light, and then you grab it. Okay, now here I'm going to ask them to go off and explore the zombie social network that exists online.
These days.
Okay, so now they're beginning to talk about. And then I'm going to introduce them to zombie films here. So I've created a wiki with 10 zombie films in it, the top 10 films. Now we're beginning to get somewhere and get into the meat of it, as it were. And now we're embedding from slide shares. This is really good, so we're getting to some more real art stuff now. That's what I was talking about. The idea of wanting some culture, so on. And then I've grabbed a thesis from Script, so this is just embed function again. And so I'm talking about the principal symbolism and doing embed. So now we're really getting proper academic stuff. Framework they use, you know, framework. But then I think maybe we'll have a bit of light relief then.
Survive a zombie attack, the latest video in the how-to series. It is instructive.
instructional team, you will learn how to find shelter and weaponry.
Okay, so that's important to know how to survive zombie attack. But then this becomes interesting because our guys are embedding content recently. But what the embed function really blurs the boundary between what's a content and what's a tool. So this is Seismic, if you know it. So this is a video discussion tool, so it's a thread discussion video. So here I'm kind of writing to respond to the idea that so recently zombies have started moving fast in films, that's a big no-no in the zombie history. And that's a piece of content, but then someone responds to it, it becomes a tool. And then lastly, I'm going to get into engaging a quiz. So this is about whether we're going to survive the zombie holocaust. okay, so that each other with us. Again, talking about scenes and stuff, this is a YouTube playlist, so people piece together lots of different YouTube clips. And people begin to use that in more seriously, kind of knowledge management, to have like lots of different things like that scenes together. And lastly, a bit of a summary. Again, I've taken a chat tool here. So this is just embed functions against the tool, so I can come in. So, any code and it's all embed function. So the point I want to make there is you can very quickly put the stuff together. It's only took me some half an hour to get it together. So the point then is that sort of simplicity triumphs over complexity in the world. So the kind of questions this raised for me is I'm kind of spending a lot of time, and we were talking about SlideShare this morning. I've done traffic comparisons of SlideShare, and it way outstrips all the learning object and OER and prostitute and look at. You can get them all together. And I know it's not all about learning in SlideShare, but it's because it's a thing that people understand. They understand what a PowerPoint presentation is, and they understand how to share it, and they can take it and they can use an embed function and share it. Who don't really know what to do with that. So, the kind of questions I think to ask is there a trade off between simplicity and shareability that is kind of worthwhile? What sort of effective shareability? So, I'm prepared to go for simple if people are going to share it. You know, you were talking earlier about the academics not doing stuff. If they could just kind of grab loads of stuff and sequence it together, maybe they think, well, I can do that. That's good fun. I know a student. Whereas I don't have to use numbers. It's entirely possible, for the sake of this presentation, that I've created a false dichotomy between shareability and complexity. But I do think there was a kind of lesson from knowledge management in the 90s. In the 90s, people spent millions of pounds on very complex knowledge management systems that no one knew was doing corporations. And they tried to get them to upload ways of sharing knowledge and stuff. But now people are beginning to find that these very informal tools work very well. So Twitter has become a digital knowledge management tool for organisations. Also YouTube, people to share lots of clips on YouTube. And so these tools that weren't designed to solve that problem have become a simple way of solving it. And so the big kind of question, I argue that complexity resides in the network. So it's, can you generate the kind of complexity and variation we know exists in learning just through purely this bottom-up approach? What we've done, what happens on social media, sort of network, you just go, give it out to the web and the complexity will arise from that. You don't try and impose that complexity. And lastly, is it only okay to kind of create fun things for about zombies, but if you want to learn about pedagogic theory, it's still well. So I think, and then it's kind of, I deliberately try to keep it as simple as possible. So all the stuff that you want to have in the learning design system, like branching, conditionality, time, you strip all that out, because then people might create stuff if they want that stuff, and somewhere else will add layers on. So people have added layers of complexity on top of Twitter to allow people to do things they want to do. It's been used for different tools. Okay.
Compared to me, so I'd like to emphasise that sometimes generals give good authors.
Yeah.
And
no,
the balance can be won. The reflective, if the teacher at the front line reflects, or the groups of teachers reflecting them, that's very valuable. But my question is very different. At the University of Newcastle, we've got this conundrum with YouTube, because a lot of the materials on YouTube are illegally uploaded. They're actually copyrighted materials that have been uploaded. We've got this situation because if we use YouTube materials and we're aware that they're actually copyrighted, and we just even forget converting those films if they're being uploaded to the server, that's out of the question. Just citing the YouTube link, is that infringement of copyright? And we've decided that it is. We've decided if we're aware that the YouTube film is illegal, and we access, even put a link in a presentation to that illegally uploaded YouTube film, then that could have that could be infringement of copyright. And I noticed one of the YouTube films that you had there was one from a I think they mentioned it in a series of something or other.
Yeah, the Dawn of the Dead
series. Now, I mean, you've embedded YouTube into your presentation, but that you would think that wouldn't be infringement of copyright, but it may be, and we're actually not sure.
I'm pretty sure it is.
And then the other issue is the ethical issues. Who has access to the chat discussions?
It's
a minefield.
Oh no, no,
done
no,
a
no,
lot
no,
to
I know
that.
But so once you get the whole kind of loosely coupled applications are, and they're really kind of big arguments on either side about your kind of closed wall really and your open. I'm kind of more on the open, loosely coupled, third party, just kind of pull together these apps and make them.
Yeah, but institutions of higher education or any institution can't take that risk.
Because I think we will never be able to keep up with that kind of innovation that's going on there. So, in terms of whatever argument one might make, pedagogy is generally better than, again, all those tools, any one of those tools would be better than the version you but there are issues around multiple sites, multiple sign-on, which you could probably crack, things like OpenID. But there are issues around protection and privacy. You might be able to crack through some kind of authentication. So we're not going to mention it. But I take all those issues. For the purpose of this argument, let's park the kind of copyright issues, I think, because they always come up, and I think we're kind of in a strange area of copyright, because a lot of those companies don't mind stuff being up there, because they think it's a good vehicle. And also, and there are kind of issues around if you don't host it, you're not responsible.
I'm not sure that's
That's the line we've taken in the AU. We don't host it. So it's a grey and acceptable. That was my argument here, if I'm more genuine about the approach we've taken before is kind of design the complexity into the tool. Perhaps the reason the lesson that I seem to be seeing from social media is that design complexity out of the tool, let the complexity kind of rise up.
Martin, I think you asked some interesting questions there, and I don't know if I want to reply yes to all of them. Because I think the first one, I think your trade-off between simplicity and shareability is absolutely right. So starting simple and letting people share and so on. But there's an extent to which I think that is a false dichotomy. It doesn't need to be either or. And I'm not sure, therefore, that you can generate sufficient complexity through bottom-up. I don't think what you showed us was a model that's complex enough to match what we need, and therefore it would, create zombies, possibly, because, you really did jettison 100 years of learning theory.
But I think if you get, that's what I did this in half a minute, but You don't know what the network will do with. If people were motivated to start,
you do. They do what you did, which is to do the easiest thing, which is pull this nice stuff together and create something a terrific presentation.
Well,
that's what people do. That's what the web's done for the last 10 years.
Maybe are you better having a million simple things that people take and actually work with than
you've got those anyway.
Kind of,
that's the point. In the context of learning design, you've got to start with the core of something which is just complex enough to meet what it takes to learn. And I don't think mere presentation, which is what you get by chopping together bits of text and video and nice bits and pieces, and all right, you threw in something labelled video discussion or something. I mean, I couldn't see how that was video discussion. But, I mean, all the great teaching that you've done at the UNU doesn't do that. It doesn't do mere presentation. It thinks about what does it take to engage the student from thinking the way they need to think to grapple with this difficult idea. What does the learner need to do?
But aren't those activities around the context? If you open the context up, and people would then, I think, start to... Maybe in those aren't we focus too much on the activity thing. As I think people folk, if they were sharing this activity, actually they took that video. The thing that I talked about this morning, the science of this one, that you take a video halfway through and
agree
stop
with
it. But
I actually
I mean, that was in the essence of, wasn't that Philippa's talk about
the five days? No, I was talking about science idea that you give a video clip and then you see that someone says, they stop it halfway through and say, now what happened? And you can imagine seeing someone else has done that in this kind of sequence, I can do that. And you can also have overlay of annotation on
but
top.
But why are you doing that? It's because you've got this theory of learning that says that's a good thing to do. And so that's what you see, is that level of complexity. It engages the learner in different
ways. I think
something.
You get the, I don't know, because it is sound you kind of get the turn off from people. When you soon just start saying,
it's
you know,
but
we've been doing
to make
it for years.
Good,
we're not short of learning theories.
I think
we still haven't got these people
we're not
trashed
learning theories. What we're short of is good learning design. And you've got to see good learning design.
But I wonder when you do that kind of under the bonnet or having people do it easily and they kind of almost pick up by accident. Oh, that's a really good activity. I'm going to annotate this video and I'm going to share this annotation.
Can I suggest something? Because it's actually the area of my doctorate. So this whole process of finding a pedagogy. And you've got some great ideas. Diane's really... talks about epistemologies, student epistemologies in 2002. Very true. But I found in my longitudinal study, but it was over about 8 months, 7 months, that you start off with some really cool ideas, you try it on the students, and somehow they reject it, and you're shocked. And then you try something else, and they reject that. And after a while, you realise that the students do want... They expect to be tested on something. They expect some learning... It's students are very traditional. And what you haven't got in that, you've got loads and loads of ideas, but I think maybe you've forgotten the most obvious thing that a student wants to know. What am I going to do with them? How am I getting tested? Where's the control?
Okay, I'm not just... I also want to think kind of beyond just my higher education. So if you want to share by digital reserves, so you would be able to then take the sequence you've created. And I'm not proposing how to do it. It would be a lot better than there's a kind of a project there you've developed. And you'd be able to share that as an available object. And so it's not just about kind of here's my traditional course, but for informal learning and all sorts of learning, but I need to do X, so that I'll create a little sequence for you. And you go back to things, and that's one that Philip was about. You want students to become kind of co-developers and teachers. They need to have really easy tools. You can imagine saying to them, create a nice step sequence that explains the theory of creativity.
Right.
It might be a great sequence, but what
I know what will happen. The students will like it first 2 weeks. The teachers will get very excited this is working, and then a couple of weeks later the students start saying, why are we doing this? And then the teachers will start getting worried that they're doing something wrong, and then there'll be a reflection process. It's like you've got to reflect, you've got to innovate. And what we've got here is that the first stage you just, you're trying materials, and then you're going to get a resistance stage where the students are going to resist and the teachers are going to resist at some point. Then you have that really important reflection stage, and that doesn't happen very often in ICT. Teachers don't reflect enough. And the innovation stage is very rare as well. They have So it's a nice cycle to use, and this is stage one at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really starting to put it up. I don't think we take it, and all the social media stuff is really an early stage, don't we, so how it impacts what people do. But I think you are going to see some kind of trends there. And I just want to kind of play the mental exercise of what would happen if I took those trends and tried to apply them to this and kind of really stripped everything out that's been done before. And you end up with a kind of very simplistic and dumb thing, but this dumbness is almost its appeal.
Can I just add one final thing? I think the interesting issue is your point about the complexity is in the system, not the system itself, but the way, I don't know, you have a slide up there, Martin, about the way in which, and I think that is what's different. I think, you know, I've been surprised by, you know, Twitter is actually a very simple tool, but the community has created a structure around that, which has emerged over time. And there's something quite interesting about that I don't think we're really taking account of properly in education. But I think that's what you're getting at, which could have quite profound implications, but we're at very early stages to be able to really kind of harness and have
that. But education is harder than this. Twitter works and texting works because humans are brilliant at communication, but education is so harsh.
I agree that there's a need for, you know, you don't just teach advanced theoretical physics by just kind of guessing it and doing it by texting. But I think there is something different in the social media, and there are changing practices and learning through the network by each other.
I think another issue is, I think the Bozo, one of the recent papers, found that her students are rejecting forum discussions. You know, they don't like the idea of socio-constructivism or whatever. They reject it. They don't want to do it. And she's doing lots of research in this area. And I think that's quite interesting, because there's a lot of people are into this idea of sharing ideas. Mm-hmm. Somehow that's the way to go. It's a novel idea. And education may change. You know, another theory may come along. It suits ICT very well, because ICT is a very forum discussion, exchange of views, but maybe that's not the one. That's what Edward Burns is.
I don't know, because you can't get surprised by the students. I was in Australia, I wasn't there, but they organized themselves, and they were using Google Documents, Skype, and Facebook, and without the supervision of the teacher, they didn't even know. So when I came back, well, they even called me from Skype, and I was like, hey, we are the whole class together, and we are working from here. And when I came back, I was surprised, and they saw me on the board have been doing by themselves. And they have managed to finish the research problem by themselves using these tools.
It might be a novelty stage, but then you might get a real
No, it's the second year. Well, they have 2 years only. No, they were quite enthusiastic about that.
I think this site is great for learning. And I'm not an academic. Someone who's involved in ICT is professional. I can't spend time going down the formal educational route every time I need to get a skill. There isn't time. You know, it's just too slow to get mechanism. So I'm using things like social media to keep tucked up with knowledge. So this is not going about going out learning about astrophysics and then to go through all these sort of very formal educational routes. This is keeping tucked up, keeping up to date with knowledge, ultimately keeping myself employable in a profession as well, which is very important. You can't just do a degree and expect to use that knowledge for the next 50 years of your career, and expect still to be paid a good rate for that knowledge. It's actually extremely arrogant. It's not ever going to work. But what formal education can do is give you a good foundation. It's not the total answer to a person's education. This is where this sort of tool fits in. It's to keep up to date with those skills, and sometimes you might have to do a few hours here, a few hours there to keep up to date with something, investigating an opportunity. So I think it does fit in. Maybe not directly into the world of formal education as it stands now, but we don't know if that will draw continue as it is. So I think that's probably more where this fits in.
Zombies, the future of life and learning.
It's that irony. Eternal.
Thank you very much.